If you've got a problem that you can't solve, if you're known for your drawings of ships that are tall, if you've got gripes, if you've got dreams, if you've got something to say, then call the TBTL voicemail line today. Just dial 206-414-8285. That's 206-414-8285. The voicemail's ready to record you, and it's so easy to call Burbank and Walsh in the Bay City.
TBTL.
He's the handsome devil that came down from heaven to make some great songs and dance forever.
You don't say much, friend, but when you do, it's to the point, and I salute you for it.
Listen, I'm not one of those college types that's going to talk your ear off. I bought a balloon, and it doesn't mean I think I'm better than everybody else.
This is the real thing. This is the necessary art of our time. This needs respect.
So let's keep the drinks full, let's keep the appetizers circulating, but let's not get in anybody's face.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Oh, yeah.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
No.
Coming to you once again from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. My, oh my. It is just a gorgeous morning here. The leaves are in full color change. God, that sentence started out so great. And then I realized I didn't know how to end it. The fall colors are here, and it is really, it's just beautiful, ma and pa. So anyway, that's the update from here in the Bay City. How about episode 3020 in a collector series?
Let the fun begin.
Let's tell you about that. Oh, speaking of the Bay City, and in fact, from where I sit, perched atop Alabama Hill, I'm looking down as I start most shows by mentioning over Lake Whatcom. And there is a road that runs along Lake Whatcom. It's called Electric Avenue. I jog on it most days. And yes, I think about bopping down to Electric Avenue and then taking it higher every time I'm on Electric Avenue. But there's also a veterinary hospital on Electric Avenue, and it currently houses the internet's most famous cat.
There is something about the soul of a cat.
A cat named Cinderblock, who's known for being, well, a cat of large carriage.
This is special. This is special.
It is special that Cinderblock is so heavy. Of course, what I wanted to play was this.
I'm not fat. I'm big boned.
Cinderblock has been videotaped walking on a underwater treadmill to lose some weight. And the internet is in love, and so am I. And I can see Cinderblock's house, vet hospital, from here. So we'll talk about that. Now, the reason I was going to activate the sound drop indicating that things are, in fact, special is because our dear friend, Nora McInerney, host of Terrible Thanks for Asking and also author of books and just all-around well-known, beloved, famous person, is even more famouser than we thought.
This is special. This is special.
She recently showed up in a publication that Andrew gets home delivery of, and it's a big topic of conversation between me and Andrew this weekend. So we will check in with our friend Nora McInerney coming up as well. Speaking of the longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, there's a Hidden Valley Ranch party in his mouth. Oh, when you say that out loud, it's pretty gross. Actually, he is, unfortunately, now joining the ranks of those in sicko mode.
I get dizzy spells, nausea, cold sweats, hot sweats, involuntary trembling, dead hands, numb lips, fingernail sensitivity, pelvic discomfort.
Those are only some of the maladies that he's suffering from right now, but he's pushing through to bring us his contribution, if you will, to the program. He is Andrew Walsh, and he's in the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend, and I'm sorry you're not feeling well.
I'm fine. I sound worse than I feel, but I think we're going to have a fun show today.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm fine.
Previously on cereal.
No, I'm fine. I told you before the show that I just had a little bit of a what I'll call a background cold. I had a cold on background this weekend. You know, where it's kind of like you're basically fine, but you just feel the clouds forming in the back of your throat and your lungs a little bit of a cold. So it's kind of this thing is continuing on its path, but it's not bad at all. I just may need to mute my microphone and cough every now and then. But I just the only reason I told you was in case I go silent for maybe a longer second than usual. You think I'm just trying to remember the word "the" or one of those tricky words. I might have muted my microphone and I'm coughing.
Okay, good to know. I am. I'm feeling much better. Although my voice is still a little froggy. It's probably because Andrew, I was out late last night, man.
Oh, drinking
I was
coffee.
At a rock and roll show. I swung by Power Denny's and made the scene. No, man, I went to Built to Spill at the Wild Buffalo last night in Bellingham, Washington. I want to say thanks to listener Amelia for the ticket to the show. Also ran into listener Jason there. But the concert started at 9.
Are they related, by the way? Real question.
No.
Though, just totally coincidence that you...
Coincidence that there were two TBTL listeners.
Love it.
In the house.
Love it.
Yeah. Jason is the guy who tells the guy at the rental car agency when he's mentioned on TBTL.
Yeah, yeah, great.
That's Jason's claim to fame. And Amelia's claim to fame is that she and her husband and her kids are awesome, and they listen to TBTL. And she mentioned that they had an extra ticket for the show. The show started at 9, and I was having dinner with Carrie, and I was texting with Amelia, and I was like, so are there openers? And she was like, there's rumors of two openers. And I was like, I'm out!
Mm-hmm.
Can't do it. Like, if the show is not, like, if Built to Spill's not going on until 11, I can't, there's no way I can do that anymore. And, but then she was like, just, you know, gather your gumption, sir, and come on down. It's going to be a fun show. And she was so right. First of all, they actually went on at like 10, so that was cool. And it was amazing. Like, the place was packed because it's a small venue. They opened with like 5 songs in a row that are like 5 of my favorite Built to Spill songs. Mm. I was just in my just absolute glory. So that was really fun. But it involved me being outside of the house until about 11:30 at night, which is pretty late for me these days.
My goodness. Yeah, I know that feeling. I don't like admitting to it. But the one thing that I got going for me is I was old before I was old. So it doesn't feel quite so bad having those like thoughts about like, well, there's going to be two openers. I mean, I was having those thoughts when I was, you know, 21 years old in the peak of concert going. And the openers in those cases were probably usually my friends. But I'd still be like, oh, the headliner isn't even. I mean, the fact that you were out of there at 11:30, I assume they did not have two headliners because that there's no way the show started at 9 and they had two headliners and Built to Spill was on by 10.
Yeah, there must have been. The rumors must have been untrue. It probably was like one opener.
Oh, I see. And you skipped it. You didn't see the opener because that was my next question.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, really? No. Sometimes are you kidding me? The openers are great.
Listen, it was a big deal that I went to one concert.
Yeah, right.
Like, I wasn't going to go to two concerts. I wasn't going to watch two different bands play music.
Come on. if you had listened to the opener, then chosen a music for your weekend song by the opening band, you could have written off the entire evening. It's all on APM. Oh, if I'm understanding how things work correctly.
Could Amelia or Jason please text me how the opener was, and if they were good, maybe we'll play them on Music for Your Weekend. But yeah, I'm definitely not like capable of standing for an hour and 30 minutes and listening.
No.
Listening to two different music bands, fellow kids.
Two music bands?
Get real, dude.
Come on.
Let's see. What else is going on for you on this Tuesday? So the garbage got picked up yesterday, which is great, but it leaves a real content hole for us. They call that the content donut.
The donut hole.
It's not covered by all various forms of Medicare. And so, I mean, what do you got for me, man?
Well, let's see here. I went to a
concert. That was my contribution.
You're bringing all kinds of content. I will say I got in my car briefly yesterday to drive to the grocery store because I was, like I said, I was feeling just slightly under the weather and really was in the mood for some matzo ball soup. Oh, that's an old man store I could tell you. But I just want to let you know that I did get in my car yesterday, and I tested all the windows, and I tried the windshield wipers. Everything was there. All the mirrors were attached. All the panels were attached.
It had doors.
Four wheels, four tires, four doors. Yep. No trunk.
Cool.
I'm pretty sure. I think Genevieve was using
that. Did happen to me once. I've told that story many times on the show.
The door to your trunk or the trunk lid?
The window. When we went to my buddy Ben Gebhardt and Joe Dolan and I, we road tripped all the way down to San Diego when we were juniors. I think it was like after our junior year of high school. And we went all the way to San Diego. We visited Joe's, like, I don't know, uncle or cousin, this guy that lived in La Jolla and had like a really nice house and drove a Porsche. And I was like, and we sat on the beach and we ate fish tacos, which I'd never had. And I drank a beer maybe for the second time in my life. And I was like, this is living. But then anyway, on the way back, but we were still very Christian guys. And on the way back, I had like, this is how Christian I was at the time. I brought my like, I had my Bible with me. I had my Christian music CDs, among other things. And by the way, I had a 2-month-old child at this point or whatever. So clearly there were some lapses in my Christianity that involved impregnating people. But we wanted to go get those sourdough. Like we passed through San Francisco. We wanted to have those famous sourdough bowls, like chowder in a sourdough bowl. So we went down to like probably, I don't know, what is it called? Fisherman's Wharf or the Grotto or whatever that kind of most touristy part of this sort of San Francisco is. And we parked in a pretty rough neighborhood. My buddy Joe's Honda Civic it was one of those that had like a hatchback that was all just a big window basically with all of our worldly possessions in it. And we went and we ate our sourdough bowls and we came back and the back window had been completely bashed in. I look up on top of this housing project and there is a kid wearing a t-shirt of mine throwing my Christian music CDs and my Bible off the roof of the housing project.
Not a good feeling.
The first thought I had was like, that kid has the same t-shirt as me. And then I realized it was my t-shirt. Clicked. So we had to drive from San Francisco all the way back to Seattle with like basically no back to the vehicle. It was rough.
You really don't want to see the perpetrators because you know you're not doing anything about it. There's nothing you can do, but it's like getting a parking ticket. Like, fine, I got a parking ticket, but I don't want to come to my car right as they're writing the parking ticket because it's just you feel so angry and helpless at the same time.
Well, not if you're old to me, because funnily enough, the time when I most dressed down a parking enforcement person. And a story that for many years I told as a story of triumph, and now I look back on it as me being kind of a jerk. I was coming out of my friend Ben Gebhardt's house in college, same guy that was...
He's a bad influence.
He really is. And it's taken me this long to realize it. So anyway, sorry, back to your story. You were driving to get matzo ball soup. Your car had doors. That was good.
This is actually something that I guess something has been weighing on me in a way that it shouldn't have. It shouldn't be weighing on me. Nothing's wrong, by the way. Just a heads up. The story isn't like... I didn't kill anybody. Like there's no huge payoff to this story, but it's just a restaurant story of me being a real grumpus, at least in my head, and unfairly so. Like I realize I'm just being an unfair grumpus, but for some reason I still feel wronged and I want to take it out on Yelp, and I'm not going to, but here's the ins and outs of this. Speaking of matzo ball soup, I've really been in a matzo ball soup phase lately, probably because I have been just slightly under the weather. So I woke up with Vives on Saturday and I was kind of like, yeah, I think I definitely need some soup just to kind of like, you know, make me feel a little bit better. And so we're looking around and we're like, we could go to Roxy's. Roxy's is a little diner that's like a New York style diner here, which there are not a lot of them in Seattle. You can get yourself a, you know, corned beef sandwich or pastrami. You can also get the combo, which I recommend. I'll stop reading the menu now, but I'm telling you, it's Roxy's.
Don't they famously have the thing where they'll give you a shot and they'll slap you?
That's at the bar in the back. There's a bar connected to it called the back room, I believe, where they do that. That's called the restraining order, I think. Never had it.
Okay.
I think Sean DeTore had
Sean
it once.
Sean talked about it on the program.
And then twice and then three times. And it turns out that at a certain point, it just becomes a fetish, I think. But anyway, I like going to Roxy's. I had gone to Roxy's actually on the day that it shall always be known as Missing Windshield Blade Day. I was on my way to Roxy's last Wednesday. So Vives is like, oh, you want some soup? We go to, back to Roxy's. I was considering it. I was like, well, should we try something a little bit different, though? A little try something that I haven't already been to? Because Roxy's, I know I like it. There's no reason not to go back there. But I'm like, why don't you just try something slightly new? So I'm Googling around. I'm like, what is this place? And I find a place on Capitol Hill called, and I'll say their name, the Dacha Diner, D-A-C-H-A Diner. And I look it up, and they advertise themselves as, I hear you breathing in. Are you already getting anxious?
That's my cousin's restaurant.
I loved it. Everything was great.
That's so funny. I didn't know if I didn't know where in the story I wanted to let, I wanted to give you that information.
I'm glad you gave it to me now. No, listen, here's the deal. It is a very nice, precious place that the food was, I mean, you cannot argue that the food is incredibly high quality there. And it's, the thing is, I think my problem with it is that it's called a diner, whereas it's a really nice little boutique place that specializes in Eastern European
Russian food.
Jewish, well, it's like, Russian, it's Eastern European.
Russian and Jewish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, but when I see Dacha Diner and I see that they serve matzo ball soup and pastrami sandwiches, mm-hmm. I'm picturing going into this place and just like sitting at the counter probably, or a diner table mm-hmm. or something, and sitting down. And then as we're approaching the building, I'm like, I remember this place. This used to be kind of a Frenchy kind of nice place, and it's last in
because it's a teeny tiny little triangle of the building, right?
Right, exactly. And so then we go in. And then we're kind of looking like, oh, who's going to seat us? And then we realize, oh, you order at the counter, which is, you know, fine, but kind of not what I'm in the mood for. I'm like, oh, this doesn't feel like a diner, but okay. And then you order, and they're right away, they're kind of like, well, you know, it's family style. We cannot, they kept stressing, we cannot guarantee what order the food is going to come out in. And we're like, okay, well, we're just going to get a basic thing. Like Genevieve just, they're like, we really encourage you to get family style. And, but Vives is getting like a plate of, you know, fried eggs and latkes. I'm getting matzo ball soup and a sandwich. Like, that doesn't seem like a kind of a family style small plate, let's all share this together. It's like, we just wanted to get a pastrami sandwich and, you know, some Jewish deli type of food. And so we go in, and then it did take I ordered my sandwich, you know, I ordered basically a Reuben without the Thousand Island. And then, like, for the most part, things are coming out in the order that you would hope. Genevieve's breakfast comes out. My soup follows not too long after. This is the way God intended these things. But then the sandwich takes about 20 minutes at least to come out, 25 maybe. And then it comes out and it's got the Thousand Island, and the woman serving it, she's like, oh, this is my fault. You told me no Thousand Island. Like, she caught it. I didn't even have to say anything. She's like, okay, he's going to make another one.
I wonder if it was literally my cousin.
Maybe. She was really, really sweet. Everybody was really sweet, but then she was kind of like, okay, so he has to make another one from scratch now. And I'm like, well, we've been here like 25 minutes. Genevieve's long done with her food, right? And I'm just kind of like, and I know my face is emanating just kind of like, this is a grumpy old man who does not belong here, right? Like, again, the restaurant, I wouldn't not recommend it. But what I would say is, if you are a foodie who likes to go to places where you can, because, and this was happening all around us, like people just being like, talking about the food and Instagramming the food and sharing the food and talking to the servers about how good the food is. And like, that's fine. Like, that's a different world. That's not for me on a Saturday when I just want to go into a diner and get a pastrami sandwich and a soup. I ended up just kind of saying, like, you know, just give me that sandwich to go. Like, I'm not sitting here for another 25 minutes so that Genevieve can be already onto her next meal by the time I'm eating my sandwich. So I do think, so that's where I was. And now, of course, knowing that you know the person who runs it. And again, I got to say, and I was even thinking about this because I wanted to write a Yelp review because I felt put off, but I knew it wasn't that there's anything wrong with the restaurant. It's just that it's not what I like. And then I get into this whole thing of just like, goddamn Seattle. Like, you know, like it starts spinning out of control for me. Like, there's a million little boutique places now where people can, like, you know, goo and gah over the cutesiness of in the. I was like, you know, if you're taking a Rachel Bell food tour, like Rachel Bell's a real foodie, and sometimes she and Genevieve and she'll take her gang of friends on a food tour where they sample different things around various neighborhoods. Like, that's something that people enjoy. It's just not for me at all. Yet it also puts me off in a way that it shouldn't. It makes me feel like, the people, I don't know, Seattle is becoming more that and less kind of what I like, which is just kind of like, you know, little kind of grubby corners that keep on kind of getting swept away under the rug. And so I just was putting a lot on
I'm just surprised you didn't do
Daca
your normal
Diner.
Thing. I'm surprised you didn't do your normal thing of like Googling, like Google image searching the place so you know what you're getting into, because I feel like if you would have done that, you would have, you know, you would have probably gotten to that conclusion before you went in there. Because, yeah, it's definitely not like – it's not a greasy spoon. It's a kind of hip, super hip, but you know. And by the way, if you choose to go on Yelp and leave them a bad review, first of all, I can't stop you, and you will be a voice in the wilderness, because I'm looking at their Yelp reviews and it's almost embarrassing how much people enjoy putting positive Yelp reviews about the Dacha Diner.
Well,
now.
That's what
so,
I was
mean, honestly just maybe to bring them back down to earth. You should do it.
Well, no, what I was going to say was, here's the deal. First of all, I did do a very, very preliminary look at it, but I only looked at the photos of the inside, and I was like, yeah, it looks a little, it looked a little well lit, but I didn't realize it was going to be this whole thing of kind of like, yeah, you're supposed to order a sandwich family style. Like, I didn't dig that far into it or that thing. But also, like, that's what I was struggling with, was I wanted to write a Yelp review that really was an explanation of what my issues were and how, like, I honestly was, for the past 3 days, I've been writing an essay in my head with the subject line, what was I going to, like, kind of precious but not practical. Like, it's like the food, there's no arguing that this was an amazing bowl of matzo ball soup that I had. Like, I'm not just saying that to be nicer because it's your cousin's place. The food was freaking great, but it just wasn't what I wanted. And then, like I say, and this isn't fair, it's not fair to them. As I'm sitting there just waiting for a goddamn sandwich, I'm just kind of like, and then everybody's kind of like, oh, tell me what's in the crust of this thing. I'm overhearing these conversations and I'm rolling my eyes. And again, everybody can enjoy what they enjoy, but I'm just being a total grumpus about it. And so I wanted to kind of write a review about like how I am a broken person. And this wasn't for me, but it's because I'm a broken person. And while I sat there waiting for my food, all I could think about was everything that's wrong with modern Seattle, which is, again, not
you
really.
You didn't order a grilled Balkan kebab of ground beef, lamb, and pork with potato salad. I noticed that on the Yelp reviews because that – I can't ever say that word, but that's a big thing in Croatia. Mm. And when we were with
– sounds good.
For Kevin and Anita Kamarokev's wedding in Split, Croatia, we were – I had not yet had one of these, I can't ever say it, cheese or whatever. And it came down to my last chance to have one while we were still on, like, Croatian soil. And me and Anita's uncle went looking for one. And we came so close to missing the boat back to the cruise ship. The last one. And if you miss that, the cruise ship leaves. Like, they're not, like, hanging out waiting for you. I would be living in Croatia right now if I had gotten to that boat 35 seconds later, and it was all to have some of this chivap chichi or whatever you call it.
It sounds delicious. Although it does, when you were telling your story, and these things kind of tie together a little bit. I know we're running a little bit late here, so I'll wrap this up. But it is – and again,
we got to get Nora on to complain about my dad's sign business.
I just want to – I think I have, but I will reiterate again – regarding what I'm about to say and everything I have said, I know that I'm the one who's in the wrong here. I know I'm the one who needs the attitude adjustment and that I'm putting way too much on these places. But I think this underscores how I think about food is when you were mentioning you were in San Francisco briefly, but you had to get the famous food in San Francisco. Now, that was 20, 25 years ago, whatever it was. How old are you? You're you're 92 now, so that was probably about 45 years ago.
I'm 92, but I went to a rock concert last night until 11:30,
that's
Andrew.
Right.
So.
Whoa.
Yeah, you wouldn't know how old I am.
But then when you're in Croatia and you wanted the very specific beef thing, which that beef dish, what's it called again?
Well, I can't say it when I'm looking at it, let alone now that I've closed the picture.
Okay, never mind.
Like,
but
chivap chichi or something like that?
I mean, that definitely sounds up my alley. Like, that sounds great to me. Almost everything that was not cheese-related on the menu at the Dacha or Dacha looked amazing. Again, I can't – but, like, for me, like, making a fuss about food is just against my DNA, and it probably has to do with the way I was raised, and I grew up in a pretty, like, kind of – you know, not a super sophisticated family, I would say. And so I have some pretty basic tastes and stuff when it comes to food. Like, for me, if I'm somewhere and somebody's like, you got to get the blank food because that's what this region is famous for, I'm like, that's fine. If it's convenient, I'll have it. But, like, I don't go seeking out, like, those food experiences like other people do, which is why things, you know, kind of the I guess you would say maybe the finer things in life are maybe lost on me a bit.
Is it because of your kind of narrow range of things that you like to eat that you sometimes when it's like you got to get the famous, you know, Sese tacos, which is like brains tacos or whatever. Like, is it – do you think that's why you developed that kind of that sort of lack of feeling like you want to necessarily go for whatever the regional specialty is or whatever?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I wonder if there's part of it rooted in a bit of pickiness, but I don't think so. I just honestly, like, and again, I don't know why it bothers me. It shouldn't, but, like, I just, like, hearing people goo and gah and talk about food just irritates me. I don't know why. I don't know why. Like, you know, I'm fine with, like, you take a bite of a sandwich. How is it? Oh,
about,
pretty good.
What about an hour-long show on hot dogs where there's a certain amount of gooing and gawing, by the way, I've never heard goo and gaw that way. Is that a Utica thing?
I might
Did
be.
You invent that? I kind of like it.
It's Albany, right? I don't know. I guess I was thinking goo goo gaga. But I don't know. But again, I don't think there's anything wrong with people doing that. For some reason, it just sets my teeth on edge. Like, oh, my God. I don't know. People talking preciously about food, especially in restaurants. And it just ends up linking to so many other things to me that it's like it's about like, oh, well, let's get a photo of us with this meal before we dig in. I'm just like, fucking eat your sandwich.
You want a place, no muss, no fuss. You sit down, they give you food, you eat it, and hate yourself afterwards.
Exactly.
Simple. Just like God intended it.
Why is that so hard?
I had way too much matzo ball soup at the Power Denny's.
That's right.
Oh, nobody looked me in the eye. And God couldn't see me through all the neon and radio interference of the top of the building. So it was a safe place.
That's right.
No, I hear you on that. And yeah, you know what? On the subject of that place, and then Nora's texting me right now going, are you guys calling? So we got to move on.
That's a good Nora
impression. Funny thing about that restaurant on Capitol Hill that my cousin Ruthie is one of the founders of is that it looks like everyone's crazy for it. There's almost nothing on the menu I can eat. Like, they opened that place at around the same time I stopped eating meat, and it's almost exclusively – it's just like piles of meat and egg and cheese and things that are delicious but that I don't really eat anymore. So the timing was not auspicious. So I will join you in protesting that place, but for totally different reasons.
No, people should check it out. But now you know what you're getting into. Don't think that you're just going into a diner for a pastrami sandwich.
Oh, this whole thing got started because of the alliteration of dacha, which you know what a dacha is, right?
No, I don't. I thought it was pronounced daca when I was just reading it.
In abolish DACA diner. Show title? Maybe. In Soviet Russia, one of the things, you know, that they give you under communism is everybody gets a little tiny square piece of land in the country. I mean, literally like 10 feet by 20 feet. And you put a little shed on there and you grow vegetables and you go there in the summer and that's called your dacha.
Oh, I like that.
And so that's and it's like it's I don't know if they do it anymore, but they did it, I think, kind of when Russia sort of turned to communism. And so that's a whole like there's lots of older Russians who spend a lot of time out on their little dacha growing vegetables and stuff. So I think that's the origin of that. But anyway, I was really tempted to not say anything, but I didn't want to. You were going to figure out at some point that I had a connection to that place. And I didn't want I was not trying to. It's a trap you.
Well, I'll
but
be,
I also hope I didn't get inside your head too much.
I honestly swear to God that story would have come out basically the same way. Like, that story was always about me and not any problem with, like, they were incredibly sweet people. They were. I mean, that was one that we got to go. But that was what was bothering me, was that I was both really put off, but everything was perfect. You know, like, there was no reason outwardly. It was good service. It was amazing food, but it just wasn't what I wanted. And then I started piling all these other cultural things on top of it. That was probably not fair.
Sure. Okay. We do need to take a break because we're going to lose our Nora McInerney window, we can't risk that. So
no,
we'll do a quick break. We'll talk to
Nora. Trust me. I just learned that myself.
And we'll be back with more TBTL in just a moment. Stay with us.
So how do we know each other? And how do you have my number? Well, why don't you
what album is this off?
This is off of a little EP called Books by Belle and Sebastian. It's funny because it sounds nothing like most Belle and Sebastian musically, yet it's one of my favorite songs by them. It's called Your Cover's Blown.
Yeah, I know the chorus of it, but the beginning I was like, this is some very like non-twee stuff going on, which is what Belle and Sebastian's main vibration is. Andrew, we have to welcome to the program our dear friend and a person whose time is very valuable, one Nora McInerney. Hello, Nora. Welcome.
Hi. The time is 11:47 a.m. where I am. So
the text that I was
getting to hear from you.
The text I was getting from Nora during the break were included, but were not limited to. It's a good thing I like you because I value punctuality! 3 exclamation points. Thank you.
I do. And when I am told by a person that I admire that they will call me at 11:30, you know what I do? I sit down at 11:28 and I turn my phone off of silent and I wait. I wait.
Can I say I would have texted you. I often do that. I assumed that Luke was texting you saying, "Hey, we're coming up to the break pretty soon. You weren't getting any updates." So I apologize for that.
3 professional communicators doing our best.
I will say this, though, and Luke, I hope I'm not putting you on Front Street about this, but I do think that I have gotten to a point where for regular guests of TBTL, I've always assumed that everybody knows that we're kind of on TBTL time, which always means 15 minutes later.
The picture that the vision I had of you, Nora, was that you were in your tough shed / office working with your phone nearby, writing your next great book or TED Talk or what have you, and that the phone would ring when it rang and you would pick it up and we would chat for 10 minutes and then we would all move on with our lives and never speak of this again. That was the image I had in my mind.
We haven't spoken in so long. I forgot what TBTL time is. Mm-hmm. I was too enthusiastic. And so I sat in our phone room at an office. These are all very strange things. Usually I am in my shed just typing away in my little she shed. But, but not today.
Well, thank you, and I'm sorry. I didn't have time to text you because I was busy defending my family's honor when it comes to the restaurant business from a very grumpy Andrew.
Well, I'm just saying. Let's call a restaurant a restaurant and a diner a diner is all I'm arguing.
He's mad because my cousin's restaurant has diner in the name. But it's like a kind of a foodie, like sort of Russian and Jewish or Eastern European and Jewish vibe.
Oh,
you would love
yeah,
it.
That would bother me. I'm on Andrew's side here. If I go to a diner, I definitely want it to be shitty. I don't like when I show up expecting food and then it's fancy. I really fancy is hard for me. And then I'm like, well, I got tricked and I'm not going to get unlimited Cokes here. I know it.
Have fun hosting the show, you two. I'm out.
No bottomless squirts at this restaurant.
No. They're going to give you like an artisanal soda, or they'll be like, well, I guess we can make a root beer out of whatever, you know, however people imagine they make root beer. And then it arrives and you're like, this was $6. I better savor it.
You know, I would say the worst artisanal thing, the thing that is supposedly good that is never good is when a restaurant makes its own ketchup.
You know what I mean? Yeah, that's a crime. It's a crime.
Like it needs
and especially
to be
if they try to serve it to a child, I'm like, please don't do that. Mm-hmm. You've upset the baby. He wants Heinz, and he wants to squeeze it himself. He does not want it in a small container. He does not want it in a packet. He wants to dispense it himself. Actually, give him another vessel to hold it, like a bowl, an empty bowl that he can fill with ketchup, and then pour his fries into and eat like cereal.
What is more disappointing, a homemade ketchup in a restaurant or homemade chips? You order a sandwich, you're like, oh, yeah, there's chips on the side, and you're picturing just like Lay's potato chips.
Oh, I'll mess
chips.
With homemade chips.
Really?
As long as they're fried to within an inch of their life. What do you say, Nora?
Yeah, I agree. I will eat a homemade chip. It has to be extremely greasy and satisfying. And also, really, I'm not that picky about food as long as there's a lot of it. It's when I go to a restaurant and the food is there's not enough that I'm like, well, this is automatically bad food because I'm starving when I leave. And I've been invited to several fancy dinners where I go to McDonald's first and eat a large fry, and then I can sit through and pretend to like eat foam and be excited about it. But I go to dinner to eat, to fill my body with food to survive another day. So I can't have a cute dinner. I don't want a cute dinner. I don't want a dinner that's like, that you want to take a picture of. I just want to eat a meal of food, which, Luke, you took me to another place that your family owns, and we ate a lot of food, and that's exactly what I needed.
Yeah, that was old Pollo Bravo there in Portland.
Yeah.
Where people were, it turns out later, very starstruck that you had stopped by. I didn't realize that I was rocking with such a regional celebrity in Portland as Nora McInerney, but yeah, it was a whole thing. Everybody was like, Nora McInerney was here.
Did they take a picture of me and put it on the wall?
Oh, they should have.
Because that's how you know you're in a real good place.
Sure. I know. I want to be up in a dry cleaner somewhere.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate like New York accomplishment is like if the local dry cleaners has a framed picture of you next to Danny Aiello. You've really made it.
I can see that for you in your future.
Nora, you've only been on the show for about 4 minutes and you've already... You've generated multiple quotes that could be pull quotes. In fact, people might say that you're somebody who likes to and creates a lot of quotable quotes. People like Reader's Digest, which, Andrew, why don't you pick the story up here? Because this is actually something that happened to you, right?
Yeah. So this weekend I was sitting in what I was sitting on top of what I will refer to as my Reader's Digest chair. Which is in a very specific
that's
room.
Definitely the toilet.
That is the toilet. And what do you
I was
want?
Like, oh, is it a recliner?
No. Reader's Digest. Reader's Digest is the type of magazine, the moment you get it, you're like, yay, the new Reader's Digest is here, and you put it in the bathroom, and you wait.
Yep.
And so one thing I was doing differently was I was starting at the beginning and working my way through it chronologically. I usually just kind of flip to the humor and uniform first, then all you know, I read all the jokes first, and then maybe drama in real life. This time I was going through more intentionally, and pretty near the beginning, there's quotable quotes, and I start from the beginning. There's a quote from Amy Poehler, Goethe, Cabello, I don't know who that is, blah, blah, Alan Alda, and then all of a sudden I'm looking down at the photos of these people. I notice that there are more quotes than photos of the people who are giving the quotes. I'm like, oh, who's been left out? And then all of a sudden I see McInerney's down there. Like, what the heck? I know her. And then I go looking for the quote. Nora, do you want to give your own quote here? Do you remember your own quote?
I don't remember it because when you sent it to me, I responded, I said that?
That is exactly how you responded. Here it is.
Let me just, Andrew, you've already kind of laid it out, but if I can, try to paint the picture for the listener, for those that don't take home delivery of Reader's Digest. It's the bottom of the page is it's like a photo of Amy Poehler. It's a photo of Goethe, the philosopher, like you said, Alan Alda, Goldie Hawn, Jimmy Kimmel, and snugged right in the middle of them is our friend Nora. Just by the way, a beautiful photo of you, Nora. Was that you said one time someone did your glam?
It is the one time I did a red carpet, and it is the one time that somebody did my makeup for me, which I'm very grateful for, because who knew that night would end up in the pages of Reader's Digest, although I did not say that quote on that night. I'm glad that there's one Getty image of me and that I look very good.
So yeah, I have the APM login for Getty. So if I go to, should I just download it a whole bunch? No, you don't get any residuals for your own photo being downloaded, I assume.
I don't think I do. Yeah, I don't think I do.
Still, though,
I recently found out that the rights to a picture of me is $50 because I got billed by NPR for CBS using a photo of me from NPR from a wait taping. And it was $50, which felt low to me.
I just realized that this quote really, everything is really holding together from a content perspective today, because this actually ties into the topic we were just talking about here. If you guys are ready, can I read this quote? Can I bring up a little?
Yes, I'm ready.
How's this music?
Nice.
Love. Here we go.
Welcome to Playboy After Dark.
That's right.
I'm Hugh Hefner.
Playboy before dark was a lot for me. I don't even want to know what happens after dark.
He had a talk show. Well, he had like this real kind of like swinging space age bachelor pad, and he would host it from this like cool apartment, and like, you know, Gore Vidal would come by and stuff. It was actually kind of a good TV show.
Here's Nora's quote. Love is like an endless cup of coffee at a crappy diner, only it won't give you heartburn and you'll actually enjoy it.
So Nora? That makes me want to cringe. Also, it turns out I was reminded, because it's so out of context. So it's, I don't remember saying that probably because I didn't say it. I wrote it in my second book, and I was talking about how, about the unlimited nature of love. And I feel like I made better points within that chapter, but that is something that I did say about falling in love with my current husband after my first husband died and having enough love for both of them and all of our families loving each other and growing into one big family. And I think without that knowledge, you think, like, who is this? Who is this idiot?
I thought for sure when you wrote back, when did I say that, or that you seem to have no knowledge of saying it? I thought, oh, well, then it sure as hell isn't from a book. I've never written a book, Nora. I don't know if you know that about me. But I figured, oh, this must be from a book. And then you're like, I don't remember saying that. So I figured, well, then it's definitely not from a book, because you would the editing process, the writing process, I would figure that every sentence that you write would in some way stick with you.
No, I have no recollection of having written any of my books, including the book that I'm writing right now. I'm like, did I write that? I'm editing it. And I'm like, is this me? Did I write this? Did I just find this Word document on my computer just fully formed?
Wow.
Yeah.
I have to admit that when Andrew sent me the link to the thing, and he just wrote in all caps, top story. And it took me a minute because I was looking at it on my phone. I was reading the quotes and I was like, okay, that's a lot of excitement from Andrew for a Nora Ephron quote. I literally didn't realize it was you. I thought it was Nora Ephron. And I was like, okay, I guess we could talk about this.
She's great.
It took me. She is great. If you're going to be mixed up with someone in my mind, that's a good one to be mixed up with.
Yeah. Yep. But, I agree. I agree. That's the goal.
So wait, what is your new book about? As much as you remember any part of it.
The new book is a novel. And yeah, have you seen the movie Bad Moms?
No.
Okay, you should. It's the movie that put me into labor with my most recent child. And it's created by the same people who made The Hangover. And it's kind of The Hangover for moms, I guess. It's a funny story of three unlikely friends. She is not. Kristen Bell is in it.
I love her.
Kristen Bell, Katherine Hahn, and Mila Kunis.
Oh, my God.
So it is a novel based on those characters.
Wait, do you have the rights to that? Did they ask you to write this?
They did, and I do.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, the guys who made that movie are the funniest, most generous, like, kind people that I've met outside the two people that I'm talking to. And
are they more punctual than us?
So much fun. They're absolutely more punctual. They're grown adults.
ouch.
Yeah, and I think they read my first book, and then they asked if I'd be interested in doing this. And the answer was, yeah. And it has been so fun to just write something funny.
Yeah, is this your first work of fiction?
Yeah, it is.
How's that treating you?
It is. It's so much easier not to have to live everything before you write it. It's kind of nice. It's kind of nice to just be making stuff up and just talking about absurdity and finding humor in situations that aren't just your own personal tragedies, which is kind of nice. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, I'm so happy for you that you get to create something that isn't just like churning your own personal guts back out onto the page and reliving it.
Right. Yes. It's honestly, it's a relief. And so I do think that I think maybe for people who have read all of my writing, it might be slightly jarring. Although I think people know that I'm funny-ish, but there's definitely nothing sad in this book, and so that might bother them. But I also think it's just, you know, we all contain multitudes, and it's nice to be able to actually work those multitudes.
I'm not fishing here, but I'm legit curious. I got to say, I was surprised that you're saying that it's kind of easy to jump into fiction from after writing nonfiction for so long. I was expecting to be like, well, it was harder than I thought because of X, Y, and Z. Are there any
Here's
aspects of writing? Yeah.
Actually writing in the moment, because I write memoir, and most of the things that I write are, you know, a recollection of something that has happened. So writing something that is active has been challenging for me. Mm-hmm. And also because, you know, the only other version of fiction that I've written has been a film script. I mean, the first draft was 90% dialogue. I'm like, that's not helpful. That's not a good book.
I never thought of that.
Challenging. Yeah.
I had,
you need real plot, not just funny people saying funny things back and forth.
I was talking to, you might even know him, you know Chuck Klosterman?
No, I don't know anybody. You know, I don't know. I know of him. Yeah. He's a famous person. Come on. Has he been in Reader's Digest? In that case, did I share a page with him in Reader's Digest? No. Yeah. But my dead husband has all his books.
During the break, we asked Nora if she had a song she wanted to come in with, and she said, I've never heard a song. So that just tells you where you live in the pop culture universe. Well, Chuck wrote a book of fiction, and I was asking him about it on LiveWire, and he said it's actually, for him, challenging because he goes, you know, like, making up a table is harder than you would think. You think it's just, like, it's wood, and it stands on the ground, and you put things on it. But he's like, but you have to make it up in your mind when you're writing, and you have to describe it, and, like, you have to do that with everything in a book when you're writing fiction.
Yeah, I know. It's really maybe it is harder than I want to think. Also, it's due on Friday, and I think I'm going to need another week. So,
Can we come back to Reader's Digest for 1 second? Because I don't want to lose the thread on this. Like, so when you got that text from me, so I just took a photo of the layout and I sent it to you and kind of highlighted your thing. Like, what was your reaction other than not remembering saying it?
Like, why am I in Reader's Digest?
Was any part
and
of
also
you like
not identified as a writer? Like,
yeah, well, as author, you're identified as an author.
Am I?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I just saw the words Nora McInerney. I didn't see the word author.
Oh, so yeah,
I was
no.
Like, well, I mean, okay.
Oh, yeah, no. Comma,
hopefully.
Comma author. Was any part
comma
of you
author
like
is on there?
Like, hey, they're stealing my shit? Because I mean, I'm sure they're in the rights here, but I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, I wasn't. It is sort of strange. Like, I guess I just assumed like people tell you when you're going to be in something, but that I guess not.
So do you know the people now that are associated with Bad Moms? And are you – I want you to be on – do you know about Dax Shepard's podcast, Armchair Expert?
I know.
I feel like you'd be so good on that show.
I want to be on that too. I don't know how to be a good advocate for myself for things like that. And so I don't know who could make that happen for me.
Well, once the book comes out, maybe you can lean on the people that hired you to write the book and tell them to lean on – Kristen Bell, who could lean on Dax Shepard, who could get you on that show, because I would listen to that.
Yeah. I know. I think we'd have a good rapport.
Yeah, he's notoriously late, though. Very non-punctual. Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
so just
ooh,
know that.
Ooh. Well, I will bring that to his attention.
Hey, I worry that we actually missed this, but you've been doing a bunch of events and things. Like, did you do something called Grief Fest, or is that still coming up?
Yeah. No, I just did Grief Fest this past weekend. It was in Raleigh, North Carolina. It was organized by my friend Nation Han, whose wife was murdered a few years ago. And he actually appeared on our podcast. You know, his most notable moment is not that his wife was murdered, but that he was on our podcast. And he's this really, really lovely person. And Raleigh is kind of one of those cities I've been in a couple lately where I'm like, wow, people here really show up for stuff. And he has a foundation in honor of his wife called the Jamie Kirk Han Foundation, and he worked with a bunch of really great organizations down there to organize a couple days of sort of grief-focused events. So they did a Day of the Dead 5K 1 week early. They did a storytelling event at a mausoleum, and then they had Kate Bowler, who's fantastic, and myself do a talk about different kinds of grief at the Pullen Memorial Baptist Church. And there were like probably 900 people there. It was bonkers. So Nation and I are trying to figure out how do we take that sad show on the road? But it was for, you know, for now, at least just kind of a one-time thing.
Oh, okay. Do you have anything else going on other than your new high flying career as a novelist that you want to tell the listeners about? I'm trying to make it up to you that we
I appreciate that. I don't, you know, I think, you know, there's that. I do make a podcast called Terrible Thanks for Asking, which still has many more listeners than yours. And I have a podcast that has probably the same amount of listeners as this one called Cafeteria Christian with myself and my two lady pastor friends. That's about just, you know, people, it's about being vaguely, you know, exploring different kinds of spirituality and religion and also undoing all the messed up things that have happened to us within like the broader church system growing up. So it's hosted by me and Natalia Turfa, who's a Lutheran pastor, and Emmy Kegler, who's also a Lutheran pastor and is the founder of a group called Queer Grace, which is, you know, a group for LGBTQIA people within, you know, the broader Christian community.
What's the IA?
I can't speak to all the letters. But I know they're in there. And they are new. They're new. The M might be intersex is one, and then A would be
asexual.
There we go. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know if I'd call myself a Christian. I think Jesus was a cool guy. I feel like I've read 3 books on Buddhism, and that's more where I'm leaning myself. I don't know. It just doesn't feel fair that like only dingbats get to own Christianity and that conversation.
Kanye's new record, I listened to it today, Jesus is King.
Yeah.
And I have a very weird, first of all, I don't think it's very adventurous musically for him, which I was kind of bummed by. But I also found myself really struggling with, I have a very weird relationship when people become very publicly Christian, which is, I was raised Christian. I don't really believe that worldview anymore, but I also don't like people doing it wrong. Like, I'm like, Kanye's not a good Christian. How dare he? But it's like, I don't even believe in the underlying principles of it. So why do I care? But I'm like, you know, it's strange. I want to judge other people if they're doing Christianity right. But I also don't personally believe in the underlying, you know, narrative around that whole thing.
Yeah, same. And like, if you are, you know, like an extremely wealthy person, like what would Jesus do? Like, he'd probably give away all his money. I don't know. What would Jesus do? I don't believe he'd be voting for Trump. Like, I know what you mean. And as soon as somebody identifies as a Christian, like a little like danger flag, like sort of peaks up for me where I'm like, oh, I don't know if like you're a safe person for me, which is really shitty. Cause actually there's some really, great people in that community, but more often there are people who have been sort of, you know, shunned by that community and believe that they're not like worthy of love and happiness because of what that community has done to them and to the world. And frankly, I mean, done a lot of bad shit in the world. So, I don't know. It's just a really good phrase. I mean, my dad used to say to me growing up was that I couldn't be a cafeteria Christian. And I was like, why would you not be? Why would you not pick and choose? You know, like you can't, you know, like I would, like even in middle school, I was like, I don't think that abortion is wrong. And I don't think that that should be something I'm being taught in school. My dad was like, well, that's what we believe. So, you know, you can't just pick and choose what you want. You know, like if you're a Catholic, you got to take it all. And I was like, yeah, that's not going to work for me. And I think it's smart that, you know, in life, and especially when it comes to like whatever sort of spirituality or faith you have, that you do pick and choose. Obviously, you should not just be taking, you know, the full meal deal. You got to take what you like, leave the rest.
Yeah, I'll have the Macho Nachos, which is the very best thing they offered at Daniel Bagley Elementary School in the cafeteria. We would just like wait all week, like Friday is Macho Nachos. Yes.
Okay, I have to go.
All right, thank you.
I appreciate you. I miss you guys both. And Andrew, will you give a better picture of that page and send it to me? I'm not going to buy a Reader's Digest.
Take a better picture. I mean, I spent a lot of time on that picture that I sent you, but sure.
That picture was taken while he was crapping.
It was most certainly not. Goodbye, Nora. Sorry we were late.
Nora, one request. Yeah. Can you please make your Christian podcast not more popular than TBTL? Because that's all we have, is that you have at least one podcast that doesn't have 97% more listeners than us. Don't take that away from us.
I mean, it's not popular, so I don't think it will. I don't think it's catching on.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. I am surprised that Nora shares the same kind of feelings that I do, Luke, when it comes to kind of food and dining. And now I'm wondering if it's kind of a Midwestern sensibility.
I bet it is. I could see that. She really got your back on that whole thing.
Yeah, I could really use that. In fact, I think I was, I got into the spirit, and I think I was more cutting towards the dacha. Dacha? Mm-hmm. I need to start saying it right. Dacha?
Dacha. Yeah, dacha.
Diner. Yeah. A dacha restaurant.
Yeah, you felt you were emboldened.
I know.
Because
that's
you had a verified celebrity on the line who was like supporting your point of view. Have you seen anything about Cinderblock the cat?
Just a little bit. I saw some tens were posting about Cinderblock from the Bay City on our Slack channel.
Yeah. I'm so excited by this. This cat has been taking the internet by storm. A 25-pound cat named Cinderblock, which was dropped off at the North Shore Veterinary Hospital on Electric Avenue. And because sadly, the owner of Cinderblock was dealing with health issues themselves and couldn't really take care of Cinderblock. And Cinderblock was like massively overweight as well. And so they put Cinderblock on they have like a treadmill that's like in a kind of a, like in a tank of water so that it's not too much, I guess, pressure on the joints of old Cinderblock. Mm. And there's a video of, I actually don't know what Cinderblock's gender is. I'm just going to go with, I'm going to go with the they them for Cinderblock, but the video has gone viral. It's been viewed 2.2 million times, and it's been a big thing. And this whole time, Cinderblock was like mere blocks from my house. I feel weirdly excited to have a celebrity cat in the neighborhood.
Here's my question: was this cat renamed after it grew into a fat cat?
Great
because
question.
It's a thank you. Because it's a big gray cat that looks like a cinder block, so it seems like the name is perfect. But at one point, this was a tiny little kitten. So did they change the name?
Yeah, like and cinder block. I mean, the cat is gray, so mm-hmm. the cat is the color of a. Kind of the color of a cinder block, so that would make mm-hmm. some sense. Like if it was a tabby, mm-hmm. that'd be a really weird name. But yeah, I don't know if that's. I should call. Should we call down there and ask?
Sure.
I'm sure they're getting like hundreds of calls a day about cinder block. I'm just because or did they name it cinder block when it showed up?
Yeah, that's what I'm. That seems to make the most sense, right? I doubt this cat was born. I'm looking around at all these different articles that have been posted about this. Yeah, you're right. They're probably being overwhelmed with phone calls right now.
You don't like it when I call places and I don't tell them that they're on the pretend radio.
Well, I think that there's some legal issues with that, although I don't know.
It's recommended or is it like illegal?
Different states have different laws about whether or not you can record somebody without their knowledge.
Oh, okay. Well, I think we live in a pretty forgiving state here in Washington. I think it's actually known as the wiretap state. It's actually
yes.
That's the second. It's like the Evergreen State. That's nickname number one. But right below that is the wiretap state.
Mm-hmm.
You're totally allowed to call people and ask them questions about celebrity cats.
The great state of Washington, aka the wiretap state. I'm also not getting an answer on the gender of the cat either. Although here it is. Cheered her on. It looks well. According to the article of this BuzzFeed, according to the author of this BuzzFeed article, who's Christy Lee Yandoli, Cinderblock is a she. But I will say, people always assume cats are she's when they don't know. Unless you name her Professor, and then everybody assumes your cat is a boy because the world is a sexist place. True story.
The Professor. Was a woman cat.
Was a woman cat. All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. There's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
You can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
Have any emails of interest before we wrap this bad boy up?
I think so. I mean, really what I feel like we should be doing is just go. This Reader's Digest always has so much good content. I just feel like we should just be going through the Reader's Digest, but whatever.
Don't waste it. Like, we'll do a whole...
Yeah.
I mean, we were going to have a monthly Reader's Digest segment, which
we should, yeah.
Like, one other time we've done it, it was one of my favorite things that we did in a long time. I very much support that idea.
Here's a voicemail that we got. Do you remember? I tried to describe to you this weird feeling that I get. It's a kind of a tingling feeling kind of in my gut or my lower gutty works when I think about falling. Like, I don't wear shorts outside all that often, but if I'm wearing shorts and I'm walking down the sidewalk and I'll have like a quick, I don't even know how to explain it, an intrusive thought / fantasy of like falling down, or if a biker or a skateboarder passes me and I'll be like, oh, I hope they don't fall down. And then I'll like kind of have a split second moment where I'm picturing myself falling down, and then my body kind of tingles almost like in preparation for my own fall, that it remembers viscerally the feeling of like scraping my knee as a kid or something. Well, we got a voicemail from somebody who didn't leave their name, who wanted to I think commiserate on that, although take a listen to this, and I'm not sure if we're talking about the same thing or not.
Good morning, dummies. I was compelled to call because I was just listening, and I actually paused to call you guys because Andrew was talking about the icky feeling that he gets when he thinks about falling. And I have never felt so seen in my entire life. I have been trying to describe this thing to my family because I get it whenever I see anybody with any kind of owie. I'm a mom. I don't even know. A wound? That sounds gross. But any time that I see somebody get a paper cut, or my kids come up to me because they fell and they hurt themselves, or even on TV, if it's very realistic, I get a feeling through my entire body, and it feels really bad. And it's like a tingle through my body, but then it's almost nausea, but it's not. It's just this moment of, I've always called it to my family, the icky feeling. And if they lose a tooth or something crazy happens, I have to tell them, please don't show me, I'm going to get the icky feeling, which is a terrible thing for a mother to do. But I don't know what that is. I thought that I was the only one. I just sort of chalked it up to being, to empathy or something. But I thank you, Andrew, for making me feel less alone in this world. Power out.
I mean, it sounds similar, but it definitely sounds like the caller's experience is more intense than mine. Like, it doesn't make me feel ill. It just gives me, like, kind of the tingles.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what the natural selection kind of advantage of that would be for us as a species. Like, I wonder where that comes from, if it is an empathy thing, or if it has to do with kind of, you know, communal tribal living in some way, or what, this notion that like if something were to happen to somebody else, you would kind of feel it. As a kid, I was very extremely put off by any kind of gore. I've told this story on the show before. One of the few movies that we were allowed to watch was Ben-Hur, starring one Charlton Heston. And there's a scene at the end of Ben-Hur where his sort of best friend / rival / if you believe Gore Vidal, gay love interest, gets run over by a chariot, and he's like really hurt. And I think all you actually see are his arms. He's like, he's about to die. And I remember being a kid and having to go stand in the corner of our living room and stare into the corner and plug my ears.
Oh.
That's how much it upset me to just see pretend bloody arms from a 1950s movie,
Which was probably like Technicolor, right? I'm trying to even think.
It was like, I'm sure it was like the least like, I can't, I mean, I don't even think I really have that response anymore, but I'm sure somewhere that is to some degree responsible for why I don't see any horror movies.
Like, oh, yeah.
Like, and I'm not talking about, like, you know, Get Out or something. Like, psychological horror I find to be interesting at times, but I never, like, I'll never go to one of those Saw movies or, you know, Hostel or anything that's just basically torture porn, I call it, where it's just, I have no interest in that, even though I'm not afraid of it anymore. Like, I understand it's a movie, but I'm sure there's some, like, you know, four-year-old Luke somewhere in there being like, I don't want to see someone get their arm cut off with a chainsaw.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, me too. I'm not, I mean, I remember seeing A House of a Thousand Corpses, like, in the theater, like, way back in the day. I remember having
for a restaurant.
Yeah, I remember having a visceral reaction to that. You raised the idea of like, this feeling that me and the listener were talking about as if it was part of natural selection, but honestly, there's a chance that whatever I'm talking about actually is being bred out of humanity, like it's vestigial. Yeah. Like, I mean, I would assume that I am not like a model of where the human race is going. I'm hoping that I am the shit that humanity is leaving behind. So think about that,
Andrew,
as well.
That's a little harsh.
Well,
I think you have many qualities that I hope move on. If anything, honestly, I'm the one that I need to turn into the appendix of this society, because like you're very thoughtful. You really put other people's feelings first, unless it's my cousin's restaurant. Mm-hmm. But putting that aside, you are generally a very thoughtful person. I think you have a lot of qualities that I hope we see on this planet for the next 40 years that it exists. I have mostly bad qualities. I am pretty selfish. I am sketchy. Like, I think that's what we need to really retire from the gene pool.
Well, the important thing to focus on, though, is that we both have tails for some reason. And so I'm really
my dad's big thing. I've told you this before. When my dad looks over from a high vantage point, he gets a pain right at the base of his spine, like as his coccyx or whatever.
No, I don't
and
know
my
this.
Theory is that's because he used to have a tail, not he, but like in the, you know, I don't know, some point in human evolution. I don't actually know if we ever had tails. I don't think we did. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like some kind of primal thing where it's like if he had a tail, it would be grabbing on to something to steady him because he's nervous looking over the edge of a high place.
That's interesting. That's what you should get him for Christmas. Get him some sort of a mechanical tail that he could wear.
He'd have to steampunk thing.
Yeah, I would assume that if you really want that to work in a way where it's structurally sound and that he could actually steady himself with it or even potentially swing from the trees with this tail, then it's going to need to be like kind of a big set of metal underwear, I guess, or like a big metal diaper with then the tail coming out of it. But then you're going to have to figure out a way to like that he's going to be able to operate the tail using only his brain. So I'm assuming some pretty invasive surgery, but worth it.
Yeah. Study it out, man. You just got to study it out. I've been having a lot of dreams lately, Andrew, where I've been up on really a high place, and it's freaking me out, like, in the dream. And I wonder if that means something. I had this dream the other day. Boy, this is, even by dream standards, this is an especially boring one. I was out. I was with my friend Joe Dolan. Again, second Joe Dolan reference. Who, by the way, is the teacher of some listeners' kids out there.
Really?
I don't know, like Lake Forest Park or Briar, Washington or something. Somebody emailed us like, oh, yeah, my kid's teacher is that guy you reference on the show a lot. But for some reason, it was me and Joe Dolan. We were like on the sort of front of a huge, huge tanker type ship, like a boat where the front, almost like imagine Leo and Kate Winslet in Titanic, that kind of thing. But it's like, I don't know, maybe 500 feet over the water. That's how tall it is. And we're out in this very precarious place. We're out past any kind of like safety barriers, and the boat is going around, and we're, for some reason, I don't know why we're up there, but we can't leave that area. And I'm holding on to this small thing that's the only thing keeping me from falling off to my death, basically. And I'm like, how long is this boat ride? And he goes, 3-hour tour. And I'm like, I gotta do this for 3 hours. I gotta hold on to this thing and not fall off this very precarious position, which is what all of my dreams about heights are. I somehow find myself in a precarious position I didn't even realize I was getting into. And then I'm stuck there, and it's very unsteady and makes me uncomfortable. And I'm just like, I can't believe I have to do this for some like long duration of time.
This is about work.
You think?
This is about all the things you have going on. Like that you, I think that you, well, maybe I'm just because I, what I know about you, but you probably feel like you are, you didn't realize it as you're taking on more and more things. And then suddenly you're like, oh, I'm in a precarious situation. Oh, but I can get through this. But then it's like, oh no, after this, and maybe this is influenced by how much you and I are talking about your schedule. Like, okay, well then this week I got to go here. So can we do this? And then this week. And I, my guess is that maybe part of your brain is kind of like, how did I do this to myself where I'm suddenly in this precarious situation for a 3-hour tour. In this case, a 3-hour tour, maybe meaning a 3-month stretch of gigs. That's my thoughts on
it. Or a 3-hour episode of TBTL.
Which this is turning into.
Yeah, beauty. Speaking of which, we should probably wrap things up here.
Well, or we are at 1 hour and 13 minutes, mm-hmm. so we would only mm-hmm. have to record for about another hour and 45 minutes if you wanted to make it a 3-hour show. We're so close. We're just so close.
Yeah, we're right at that line where it's almost easier to just mm-hmm. go for it and do 3
yeah.
hours.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I'll tell you what, if you have to go, you go. I'll just keep I'll keep things moving over.
Call Nora back up and you guys can bash my family,
yeah.
my family's restaurant more. You got another loose 2 hours in you on that, right?
Easy, yeah. And like you said, we haven't even gotten into the sign business yet.
All right, listen, we should wrap things up. And that music means it's time to go, so we'll do that. But the good news for some of you is that we'll be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. So tune in for that. Until then, enjoy your Tuesday. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.